Hello and welcome to Security Intelligence, IBM's cybersecurity podcast. I'm your host, Matt Kaczynski. Statistically speaking, the vast majority of listeners tuning into this episode do not own any cryptocurrency. Well, we're talking about crypto because it implements certain principles and utilizes certain underlying technologies that could actually have pretty powerful security applications if only we harnessed them correctly. In fact, there's a case to be made, and our guest today makes it very compellingly, that the blockchain, the distributed ledger underpinning many crypto systems, can get us closer to truly zero-trust environments than ever before. Is a rehab in order for crypto's reputation? Let's find out. Cryptocurrency has hung in there since the launch of Bitcoin in 2009. It has become a major player economically and politically. And yet crypto is still, in the popular imagination, tainted by its association with the underworld. With Silk Road, the drug trade, bribery, ransomware, scams bilking Americans out of $9.3 billion in 2024 alone, according to the FBI. Crypto is undoubtedly the cybercriminal's currency of choice. Most of us only encounter it when we're being extorted. Is that entirely fair? I mean, yes, many unsavory dark web transactions do use cryptocurrency. But you know what else circulates on the black market? A lot of US dollars.
The negative side's really only half the picture. At the end of the day, it's a technology, it's a tool, no different than, say, how people use the US dollar.
That's Austin Zeisel, a threat intelligence consultant with IBM X-Force and a crypto enthusiast.
I work closely with incident responders, malware analysts, and threat hunters, tracking various sophisticated threats like phishing campaigns and different ransomware operations. Outside of my day-to-day work, I've been passionate about the Bitcoin space and the underlying technologies of cryptocurrencies, not just as a financial tool, but really as key foundations for building trust, transparency, and resilience, especially in information security.
Austin believes that cryptocurrency and its underlying technologies can bring more trust, transparency, and resilience to cybersecurity. But before we dig further into Austin's very strong case for the security applications of crypto-related tools, let's step back to that US dollar analogy.
The dollar, of course, is a currency, but it's also a financial tool. And it's still the number one currency used in criminal activity worldwide, yet no one raises any eyebrows about it.
He's got a point. It's hard to peg just how many dollars are funneled through the black market, but I've seen estimates as high as 1/3 of all paper U.S. currency in circulation being linked to criminal activity. Now, many of us see this as a matter of unscrupulous actors misusing cash, not a problem inherent to the very notion of money itself. Crypto doesn't always get that benefit of the doubt, a benefit of the doubt that we extend not only to other currencies, but most technologies. Any of these tools can be used for good or ill. It all depends on who's using it and how. So why does crypto specifically get such a bad rap?
Well, I think a big piece of that puzzle is the mainstream media, which loves to highlight the big and emotional stories around cryptocurrency, especially when it comes to financial crime. So a lot of that negative perception around crypto stems from high-profile failures. So we look back in 2013, historically, was the Mt. Gox breach, which at the time they were responsible for over 70% of Bitcoin transactions and had a pretty catastrophic failure when they lost over 500,000 coins. Then we fast forward to 2022. So that's when the FTX failure happened. I'm sure many people are aware of. So that's really when a lot of the larger financial organizations got more involved in the space. And due to misallocation of capital, that ended in quite a large failure as well.
This is something we see a lot in the cybersecurity world. The media loves a real sensational story, and to be fair, cryptocurrency has given the papers a lot of drama to feed on. Criminals do like to use Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies because the decentralized nature of cryptocurrency makes it easier for bad actors to hide their identities and obfuscate payment flows. To understand why cryptocurrency permits such evasive maneuvers, you have to understand a little about the technology underpinning many cryptocurrencies today, the blockchain.
People love to throw around the term blockchain and make it sound fancy, but it's simply a digital ledger that records permanent transactions. And with Bitcoin, that ledger is backed by a decentralized network of thousands of different nodes. And what a node is basically a small little computer that anyone can plug in that runs the Bitcoin software. And each node stores a historical copy of that digital ledger. And every time a new transaction occurs, it verifies that and records it. And every transaction is timestamped. It's irreversible, follows specific rules of the software protocol.
There's no central Bitcoin authority. This distributed network of nodes, computers that anyone can set up, runs the whole show. Whenever a transaction occurs, all of the nodes record it so that the blockchain maintains a record of where money goes without requiring human intervention or oversight. Say I want to buy a slice at the Bitcoin pizza shop. I send your store 0.00002 Bitcoin because, as of this recording, one Bitcoin equals about $113,000 US, and every node on the blockchain notes this exchange. 0.00002 Bitcoin sent from Matt to the Bitcoin pizza shop. This decentralized method of processing transactions is precisely what makes cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin so attractive to crooks.
Cybercriminals love cryptocurrencies because it's inherently more private than any other payment method or payment rail that you would use. But it doesn't mean it's completely anonymous. In fact, Bitcoin really isn't anonymous, it's pseudonymous. So there's no specific identity attached to, say, transactions, but transactions can be traced to specific wallet addresses.
The distributed ledger of the blockchain records transactions, but your name and identifying info aren't attached to those transactions, just your wallets are. This gives shady actors the opening they need.
So what these cyber criminals will do is they either will go through non-KYC, know your customer exchanges where they don't have to use any personal identifiable information. They'll also use coin mixers to launder and obfuscate their identity that could tie them to specific funds. Historically, North Korean threat actors have used this technique for quite some time. They're always using that when they conduct large-scale breaches or hacks. Now, there are other privacy coins out there, not specific to Bitcoin, that they use and aren't as open and, say, transparent as Bitcoin, but they do allow them to hide their identity more easily. And a lot of those transaction and wallet addresses can be traced when, you know, using other coins such as Bitcoin. However, when you use coin mixers or, say, another technology like coin joins, which basically batches transactions with other transactions, making it much more difficult to trace and is still highly scalable for these threat actors to use across time and space so they can quickly move funds in and out, put them in private addresses, and then, you know, law enforcement is sort of left wondering, okay, what do we do now?
Coin mixers, by the way, are services that obscure crypto transactions by blending multiple funds from multiple users and routing those transactions through multiple wallets, muddying the waters for investigators. KYC, or Know Your Customer, refers to various legal and industry standards that financial institutions follow to combat money laundering and other prohibited uses of the banking system. Non-KYC exchanges, as the name suggests, don't follow those standards, essentially turning a blind eye to criminal activity. So instead of being like wallet A to wallet B, there's all kinds of stops in between in that.
Exactly. Go wallet A to wallet Z and then back to wallet A. So it kind of scatters the activity.
The other thing, Austin notes, is that existing outside of the traditional banking system protects cybercriminals from future policy changes that could really put a damper on their days.
If they're using the US dollar and still laundering it, you know, years down the road, they're going to be affected by whatever policies are in place by a central bank. But when it comes to a cryptocurrency that is fully autonomous, you know, they don't have to worry about the externalities of a government debasing or changing the monetary policy of that asset. So when it comes to cryptocurrency, they're pretty protected from those third parties.
But the blockchain wasn't designed to hide criminals. It's just being used that way. Misused, you might say. The same way someone might misuse any tool, like an AI agent.
I analogize that to AI currently, right? We talk about the threats from AI, whether it's something existential or it's being used by threat actors, which it is, to conduct phishing operations from the cyber criminal side of things. They're using AI for their own advantage. But then again, we're also using AI for defensive strategy. So these disruptive technologies are tools at the end of the day, both good and bad.
So what was the blockchain designed for? Data integrity. And it's really good at that. Remember, every computer, every node has a copy of the ledger. You can't just alter it. You'd have to somehow alter every copy on every node. It's not like a centralized system where you can wreak havoc by toying with the master, because there is no single master.
Each transaction is broadcast to a network, and that's recorded by those independent nodes and collected into the blockchain blocks by miners. And then that's validated through a process called proof of work, which is basically the consensus protocol of Bitcoin. Once a block is added to the ledger, it's virtually impossible to change unless the entire network agrees through consensus. Say someone tries to cheat that system by rewriting transactions or committing something like double spend. So they alter the ledger saying that they've received X coins from so-and-so. The network will simply reject it.
A decentralized way of ensuring data integrity by replacing a single authority, like one database, with a distributed one. It's easy to see how something like that could be applied to security.
You can easily verify that that data is secured and not tampered with because of the decentralized nature of it. And again, you remove the need for trust from the equation, which also removes any single points of failure.
Immediately, a phrase comes to mind here. Zero trust, a lofty and perhaps fundamentally impossible approach to security. The idea of a system where you don't have to trust anyone or anything implicitly sounds beautiful, but we never really make it there because somewhere along the line, you've got to trust someone.
I think it's one of those things that people always say, like, oh, it's really good for you. And then they just don't fully implement it the way it should be. It's like, yeah, you should be eating a lot of vegetables and flossing your teeth. And then people don't do either of those things. So I think it's something that people really aspire to do, but like eating broccoli 6 days a week, they probably don't do it in the way that they should.
The first voice you heard was Claire Nunez, creative director for the IBM X-Force Cyber Range.
We always trust something. So there's never a situation where you trust nothing. That's not even possible. Even if it comes down to what was the fab that made the chips, the silicon that went into your systems.
The second was Jeff Kroom, distinguished engineer, master inventor, data and AI security architect at IBM. We pulled these clips from an old episode of Security Intelligence, where we were reflecting on the 15th anniversary of Zero Trust and discussing the ways in which we all strive for and often fail to reach this elusive state of security. But you can see how something like the blockchain could get us even closer. Sure, you'd still have to trust those chip fabricators, to Jeff's point, but you wouldn't need to trust a human custodian to protect your data, which helps reduce the risk of things like social engineering. If it's not in someone's hands, it can't be engineered out of them. You wouldn't even have to trust a single record or database. It's all distributed.
Bitcoin's technology acting as a blueprint for defensive strategies. It's a mutable ledger that can be used to prove that data hasn't been altered, whether it's a software update, legal documents, or forensics logs. And within cybersecurity, I think it's important to note that Bitcoin already satisfies a lot of the three pillars of the what we call the CIA triad. So confidentiality, integrity, and availability. Those are really the three pillars when it comes to data protection. Bitcoin satisfies these. Confidentiality, it's not tied to personal identities. Integrity through computational hashing and public key cryptography and digital signatures makes these ledgers completely secure and tamper-proof. So by incorporating that into data protection for organizations, we'll go a very long way. And of course, availability, because it's globally accessible and censorship resistant, that data can be protected and available to anyone.
And when you consider some of the tools being built on top of the blockchain infrastructure, the uses become even more obvious.
Tools like open timestamps, which are currently being built on top of Bitcoin's main layer allow you to anchor files to the Bitcoin blockchain. So creating a permanent verifiable record without revealing the file's contents, basically a digital notary. And that completely removes single points of failure, ensures authentication and security around that data, unlike centralized databases that get breached, like the infamous Equifax breach in 2017. There's also some additional open source tools out there. One is called Chainpoint, and that's leveraging Bitcoin's blockchain to timestamp and verify data. Use cases around supply chain records, like tracking pharmaceutical batches to prevent counterfeits, or even anchoring IoT data for integrity, such as smart grid logs. Chainpoint has been actually more integrated into compliance platforms like GDPR and HIPAA. So that really ensures the auditability and also tamper-proof records of that data. Babylon is another open source protocol built on top of the underlying technology of Bitcoin that actually allows users to stake Bitcoin to secure other networks through AI platforms or DeFi, which is a decentralized finance, without having to move any funds off Bitcoin's blockchain.
Even threat intelligence reports could travel via blockchain.
Being explored for cybersecurity applications, such as anchoring threat intelligence data to Bitcoin for tamper-proof sharing across organizations, enhancing collaborative defensive strategies to combat threats such as ransomware or phishing, which I think this is, you know, such an important aspect, especially in my sort of circle in cybersecurity where threat intel sharing is so important. So knowing that the intel you're receiving is accurate and hasn't been altered is huge for us.
In terms of its broad utility and its ability to act as the foundational stratum for many other technologies, blockchain is a bit like the internet itself. Bold comparison, I know, but here's Austin on that point.
It's designed to scale in layers, very much like the internet did with protocols like TCP/IP, which really hasn't changed since 1980. But if you look at that core foundation, it's slow and it's robust, but everything on top of that scaled. So the different protocols like file transfer protocol, FTP, or SMTP, simple mail transfer protocol. And then, of course, today everyone uses HTTPS for web browsing. All of that was built on top of that old core foundational layer. I see similar things being built on top of Bitcoin today. So it's not just a financial tool. It can be also a tool for many things, especially around data protection and identity verification, which are pretty vital to the cybersecurity world and really vital for every organization, because at the end of the day, what they want to protect is not only their people, but their data.
Blockchain was, at one point, pretty big. It almost, though not quite, reached the level of hype that generative AI has. There was a moment where people were looking for ways to work it into all kinds of things, not always smartly. I remember an organization I briefly wrote for that tried to spin up some kind of coin for recruiting and hiring. It was ill-defined and without much apparent use, so of course it never went anywhere. But why didn't blockchain take off in more productive ways, as in protecting data integrity, like Austin lays out here? Well, a lot of people were simply doing it wrong.
Some organizations have tried building, you know, their own blockchains. I won't name any specifically. Once the genie's out of the bottle, you can't put it back in and have it come out again, right? What Bitcoin is doing is it's shifting the societal outlook on this technology. It's really a paradigm shift. So I think one of the barriers here is education, both in the public sphere, but also for private organizations, understanding that, you know, we don't need to fear this technology. We should embrace it. We don't need to be greedy with it by creating our own. It's open and permissionless, so it's for everyone.
Effecting such a mindset shift is no small task. It involves contending with the dominant media and cultural narrative surrounding cryptocurrency, which, as we've mentioned, tends to be sensational, spectacular, and dramatic. But Austin is optimistic.
Time will tell, but I'm really hopeful that we'll soon start to adopt the technology for for other use cases.
To be sure, crypto has already come a long way. Just a few years ago, Austin points out, JP Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon decried Bitcoin as useless, only good for criminal enterprises. Now, many banks, JP Morgan included, are helping their clients buy crypto.
One example of disruptive technology is, of course, the internet, which no one, you know, questions nowadays. It's used throughout everything. It's being used for this recording right here, this conversation. Disruptive technologies, it sort of happens before your eyes. So when it first comes, people sort of dismiss it or question it. Paul Krugman, a famous economist, famously said that the internet will have no more of an impact on society than the fax machine. And that was 20 plus years ago. So look what's happened. But I like to think of Bitcoin as an ego killer. So once you start learning about it, it really challenges everything you thought you knew about technology, money, economics, game theory, politics, cryptography, and even cybersecurity. So it bunches all these fields of study into one technology, which is quite profound because it really is a paradigm shift. Like any disruptive technology, it takes time to understand. Just like technologies that we use currently across organizations for cybersecurity, like encryption or multi-factor authentication. Again, these technologies are only as strong as the people implementing them.
Let me repeat that. These technologies are only as strong as the people implementing them. If there is a golden rule of cybersecurity, this is it. So, do we ignore the blockchain's security value because cryptocurrency has some, shall we say, off-putting associates? Or do we make it work for us? Do we start using ransomware gangs' weapons against them the way they use encryption against us?
I'd leave listeners with this. Cryptocurrency, specifically Bitcoin, isn't inherently a threat. It's a set of technologies that, when used correctly, can actually strengthen data. And Bitcoin's architecture, built on decentralization, cryptographic integrity, and immutable record keeping, offers a trustless way for securing data and identity systems in ways that traditional models or systems cannot. The problem is never the technology itself, it's how we use it. If we shift the narrative from away from fear to function, we'll start seeing how Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies can be used not just as a payment network for attackers, but as powerful tools for defenders.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Please subscribe to Security Intelligence wherever podcasts are found, and stay safe out there.